Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, the clock is ticking for TikTok. The U.S. House passing a bill forcing its Chinese parent company to divest in the social media app or risk being banned.
This attempt to ban TikTok, it is a functional ban, even if one wants to talk about the divestment aspect of it, would be akin to playing whack-a-mole because we don't know what's next.
Plus, sounding the alarm on a potential lack of government transparency after a new bill looks to reform the Open Public Records Act.
Young people are entrusting you to be good stewards of our democracy, and let us not be on the wrong side of history.
Also, as the war rages on and the Palestinian death toll mounts in Gaza, how are Muslims here in New Jersey celebrating the holy month of Ramadan?
This year now is sad, so this year actually we feel guilty even drinking water, knowing our families in Gaza not having water to drink.
And mental health access. New state legislation to expand health services for the hundreds of thousands who are deaf and hard of hearing.
It'd be a step in that direction to recruit and retain more mental health professionals who are not only fluent in American Sign Language, but also many other different sign systems.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Tuesday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. Congress is giving one of the world's most popular social media platforms an ultimatum: divest from China or TikTok will be banned in the U.S. The House today overwhelmingly voted in favor of a bill that requires ByteDance, that's the Chinese parent company of TikTok, to sell the app within 6 months or face a national ban. It was a landslide vote, 352-65, with many lawmakers arguing the app poses a threat to national security because the Chinese government could force ByteDance to hand over data on its roughly 170 million American users, which is alleged to be useful to China for disinformation campaigns and even identifying U.S. intelligence targets. TikTok's owner has denied those accusations, and China today responded by equating the ban to a, quote, act of bullying. Every member of New Jersey's House delegation voted yes, except Representative Andy Kim, who didn't vote and wasn't in D.C., but said in a statement it would have been a no. He wants Congress to take up a more comprehensive bill protecting user data across all social media platforms. The bill now faces an uphill battle in the Senate, but there are plenty of groups who agree with Kim and say this is a free speech issue. For more on that, I'm joined by Nadine Fareed Johnson, policy director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. Nadine, thanks so much for giving us a bit of your insight today. The Institute has said that there are potential implications here when it comes to the First Amendment. What are your concerns?
Thank you so much for having me. Our concerns are fundamentally this is an affront to the First Amendment because Americans should have the right to access information via the social media platform of their choosing.
There's historical precedent here, though. I'm thinking about in 2020 when the U.S. successfully got China to divest from the dating app Grindr, also citing national security issues. Does that not rise to the same level here when we're talking about a foreign adversary potentially having access to info on more than 100 million users in America?
Well, again, the key here is that If this bill were to pass, now we know it has passed the House, if it were to pass the Senate, again, we believe there are significant First Amendment concerns with it. But ultimately, this bill does not solve the base issue, which is that there are platforms that have access to Americans' data. And even with this legislation, China or other governments could gain access to that data via data brokers or other means of collecting that kind of information.
There have been suggestions, as I'm sure you've seen, that perhaps by banning TikTok, which the lawmakers say this gives 6 months for that divestment to happen, not a straight out ban is what they're saying, their words, that it would embolden other social media platforms to collect even more data with having a app like TikTok out of the picture. Is that not an issue that you see or an affront that could happen to data and security in the U.S.?
Absolutely, which is why it's really important that there be a comprehensive effort to secure Americans' data via comprehensive data privacy legislation.
But is there a fear that this could potentially open the door for similar actions like this in Congress against other platforms where folks express themselves?
Well, that's exactly right. And actually, the bill that passed the House earlier today actually provides the president with wide power to be able to take similar action against other foreign-owned apps. And the other thing that this does that is of concern is that it sends a signal to other countries that they can, in turn, quash down on their citizens' access to information. Because if you're looking at this from a fundamental constitutional level, the issue is Americans' right to access information. And cutting off that access does fly in the face of First Amendment principles. And it's also sending a message to authoritarians that says, hey, we're doing it here, you can do it there.
But when you're talking about an adversary like China, like the Communist Party, could there not be a greater good, perhaps, which is what some are arguing who are in support of this bill, to take away a platform like that in order to provide more national security?
So we have heard the national security argument, and of course there are concerns about TikTok and other platforms having access to Americans' data. But again, what Congress has to do when it puts forth such a law is to be able to show that this is the path that is most narrowly tailored to achieve the government's interest in protecting Americans in this particular sense. Right now, we have not seen that they have done so. And again, because there are other paths that are clear, including the passage of privacy legislation, including limiting data brokers' access to information, those are the steps that can be taken and should be taken with urgency in order to protect Americans' privacy without infringing upon their First Amendment rights.
Nadine Farid-Johnson is the policy director at the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A controversial bill critics say would gut government transparency is making its way through Trenton. It reforms New Jersey's Open Public Records Act, which was enacted more than two decades ago, creating a statewide set of rules for the public's access to public documents. Supporters say reforms have long been needed to protect the privacy of citizens, but watchdog groups, lawyers, public defenders, and journalists, and a whole bunch of others say it'll make it harder to uncover corruption, fraud, and abuse that runs rampant in New Jersey. Senior political correspondent David Cruz reports.
The irony is almost too rich. On National Sunshine Week, we're reminded of how important access to public records is for a healthy democracy. The law in New Jersey to ensure that very right is about to get gutted.
Relax. Lower the temperature, everybody.
Budget Committee Chairman Paul Sarlow was as cool as the guy with all the votes at his committee hearing this week. His OPRA reform bill is long overdue, he said, painting a dark picture of a good law gone bad.
We want to make sure we protect our citizens and our children. Some folks, quite frankly, and I, for a lack of better words, have made some really creepy, creepy requests.
But there's been fierce pushback from good government groups and others, including journalists, who say the proposed law takes a machete to a bill that needs a scalpel.
What else does this bill do to limit access, restrict access? Well, draft material would no longer be available, including notes generated and used to prepare final reports, documents, or records. Logs of telephone calls, emails, or texts would no longer be available.
You get the idea. It's the sort of in-the-weeds nooks and crannies of government information that journalists use to expose things like corruption in government, the nursing home scandals, and remember time for some traffic problems? Those came to light via Oprah requests. Sue Livio's reporting for NJ.com exposed abuses in public-run facilities that cost people their lives.
We use the Open Public Records Act to request emails, particularly from the veterans' homes and as well as nursing homes in New Jersey, to find out, what's the conversation going on. But we were primarily focused on veterans' homes because they are public. And what we found was that people weren't seeing doctors, people weren't getting medical care, they weren't eating, because nobody was there helping them.
But journalists and advocacy groups were not the only ones sounding the alarm about the bill, which goes before another committee tomorrow, where some amendments are expected.
If boards of education or municipalities do not want to answer questions, and the only way you can get your answer is through an Oprah, well, that's what we have to do.
Young people are entrusting you to be good stewards of our democracy. And let us not be on the wrong side of history. And also, I do want to mention that, we drove about an hour to get here, and I find it completely disrespectful that half of you haven't been looking at me when I've been speaking.
It's true. Lawmakers, those who stuck around, did seem more interested in their phones than in the testimony. After the session, Sarlo ignored reporters waiting to talk to him. Assembly sponsor Joe Danielson, meanwhile, lashed out at media coverage, calling it fake news. By the way, he and all his colleagues in the legislature are exempt from Oprah rules altogether. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And David continues the conversation about changes to the Open Public Records Act on Chatbox tomorrow, talking to more experts about the political, public, and journalistic implications of the bill. That's Thursday at 6 p.m. on our NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. A number of groups and individuals are signing on to a federal lawsuit to end the so-called party line used in most counties in New Jersey. The suit was filed by Congressman Andy Kim, who's running for the Democratic nomination for Senate. He says the way candidates are grouped on ballots in a column or row based on party endorsements rather than the office they're running for is, quote, unjust and undemocratic. Organizations that have filed briefs in support of the lawsuit include the ACLU, the Law Clinic at Harvard Law School, and the League of Women Voters, which calls the line a sophisticated form of voter suppression. The closely watched Senate race has put the party line front and center and made New Jersey's unique ballot design national news. The lawsuit is trying to stop the use of the county line ahead of the June primary, but county clerks, who are the defendants in the case, have warned it's too late to make those changes to ballot layouts without disrupting elections. A hearing on the lawsuit is scheduled for federal court on Monday. Sunday marked the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a time when Muslims take part in prayer, fasting, and celebrations. This year, though, New Jersey's roughly 300,000 Muslim Americans are preparing for a more somber observance under the shadow of the war in Gaza, where more than 30,000 Palestinians have been reported killed in the conflict with Israel, along with rising incidents of Islamophobia here at home. Melissa Rose Cooper spoke with Muslim community members in the state about how that's shifted the tone of Ramadan this year.
Ramadan for me is the most special time of the year. It's a time when we break away from everything else in our lives and we focus on God. We fast throughout the day, and then at nighttime we break bread with our community members and family members.
But for Sami Shabin, celebrating Ramadan feels a lot different this year. Since the war in Gaza began, he has lost 19 members of his family.
My mom, for instance, who's constantly tuned into the news and what's going on, is, she cries more often than I've ever seen her cry. I mean, it's a really, really tough situation. You know, family members here are just, you could see it all over their faces. There's just so much stress, just worry, contemplation about what's going to happen with our family over there.
Many Muslims across New Jersey sharing similar sentiment as they observe one of the holiest periods of the Islamic calendar. Wael Rashid was born and raised in Gaza and serves as president of the Islamic Center of Union County.
As you can see, we no decoration. We decorate. We get ready to get toys and gifts for our kids. As we fasting the whole entire day from sunset to sundown, we break fasting together here at ICUC, where we celebrate the food and we eat together as a family and mingles. This year now is sad. So this year actually, we feel guilty even drinking water, knowing our families in Gaza not having water to drink, or inviting others to meals where we know our people, our family, our friends, our community in Gaza, they cannot have a sip of water to drink daily.
And as the war rages on, Rashid and other Muslim leaders are expressing their disappointment over the refusal of some elected officials to call for a ceasefire. The Council on American Islamic Relations releasing this guide to mosque at the start of Ramadan, highlighting their right to exclude anyone who doesn't support their sentiments, stating mosques need to consider whether the representatives' actions and positions align with the values and interests of the community.
And I think even if a person wants not supporting the ceasefires comes here, how he's gonna put his eyes in the community eyes and said, I'm not supporting it, knowing that 30,000 plus of this community died.
We are not here for a picture opportunity. When you support, those people do not call for ceasefire. When there is a genocide happening in Gaza, what do we need to even sit down with them? How can we share? You know, what do we celebrate with them? Is there anything to celebrate? We are in grief. And there is no reason for them to come. They are not welcome.
This is not okay to starve an entire population, to displace an entire population. That's just not okay. The world has spoken up. Our country needs to listen. Our country needs to hear loud and clear that this is not clear. And I believe that most of the country is now coming to that understanding as well.
And even though many hearts remain heavy this Ramadan, members of the Muslim community say they'll continue to lean on their faith as they pray for a better future. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
In our Spotlight on Business report tonight, a path forward for cash-strapped New Jersey City University. After 6 months of reviewing finances at the nearly 100-year-old higher ed institution, a state-appointed monitor on Tuesday said the college will survive, but it'll take a lot more budget cuts, more state investment, and partnering with another university to secure NJCU's future. The report comes nearly 2 years after the school's Board of Trustees declared a financial emergency, replacing top leadership and slashing a number of academic courses to begin righting the ship. Ted Goldberg has the story.
A state-appointed monitor for NJCU says the university should stay open despite a tumultuous financial situation.
It is essential that the universities such as NJCU of higher education in Hudson County needs to be in place to serve the myriad of students, particularly those of first generation who have long come to NJCU for their educational opportunity.
Yesterday, Henry Amoroso released a fiscal accountability plan stating NJCU has made strides from the financial black hole it was in a few years ago. He says dwindling enrollment, bad real estate investments, and financial mismanagement put the school more than $230 million in debt. Amoroso credits interim president Andres Acebo for making hard choices and trying to boost enrollment.
He has reached out in high schools. His team has gone out to try to recruit more students. He's entered into agreements with the community college. This has all served the purpose of beginning to stem the tide.
In response to the story, Acebo sent a statement reading in part, "We look forward to fully reviewing the state monitor's fiscal accountability plan and its recommendations. Our work will continue to be emboldened by our students, faculty, staff, community, and local and state leaders who have unwaveringly poured so much into the unrelenting renewal of our indispensable mission." The union representing NJCU faculty agreed with part of the plan, saying the school did overexpand and should try to sell or rent out some buildings.
Somewhere in 2020, we had no reserves. To hang on to unwise investments is not a useful thing to do.
Other parts of the plan were more controversial. like when Amoroso said NJCU should consider sharing or merging programs with other schools.
We owe to the students, past, present, and still to come, to explore the opportunities that may combine a sufficient synergy to create something better, something that can achieve more as it relates to its mission and to the outcomes that we all want.
Thinking about a merger, I think, would be the kiss of death in terms of the identity of this institution.
Union negotiator Bill Kalathis says NJCU has a very distinct identity in Jersey City, which could be threatened by mergers.
The average family salary income for students that attend NJCU is like $42,000 a year, impoverished. So the school has been a beacon of hope.
NJCU phased out almost a third of its academic programs as part of budget cuts. In February, Moody's upgraded their bond rating from negative to stable, showing that the school's austerity measures could save the school, even if they're not out of the woods just yet. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Ted Goldberg.
On Wall Street, stocks were mixed today after coming off a winning session. Here's where the markets closed.
Support for the Business Report is provided by Junior Achievement of New Jersey, providing students with skills and knowledge to explore, choose, and advance their career paths for a bright future. Online at janj.org. And by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its Renew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
People who are deaf and hard of hearing in New Jersey could soon have more access to mental health services, including more professionals who are fluent in American Sign Language. A bill that'll go before lawmakers this week would require the state to not only recruit more of those providers, but also ensure they can communicate appropriately with patients. Research shows people who are deaf and hard of hearing are subject to more risks to their mental health. And according to state health records, there are roughly 850,000 residents across New Jersey living with varying degrees of hearing loss. Our mental health writer Bobby Breyer has been digging into the legislation and is with me for the latest. Bobby, thanks so much. This is a really interesting topic. Where did the need come from? Are there just not enough folks who are trained in this?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is really the case right now, and it's kind of mirroring the mental health shortage of professionals that we're seeing not only across the state but across the nation. This is particularly a severe shortage, unfortunately, for folks who are deaf and hard of hearing. Some experts that I had spoken to had mentioned that there are just 10 master's level mental health clinicians across the state who are fluent in American Sign Language, to that point of folks who are well over 800,000 of whom who are deaf or hard of hearing. We're seeing that those numbers just don't add up when somebody needs the services. And a lot of times, because there's that lack of services, that could really influence and aggravate anxiety and depression in many situations.
Wow, and I don't want to understate that. So almost a million residents who could be in need and less than 10 providers. So why is it that this population is at such a greater risk? What is it about it that's really exacerbating mental health issues?
There's a number of different factors. I think one that is most important is the communication barrier in a lot of different aspects. A lot of times if somebody needs to reach out for help, if they do not have an interpreter or somebody who was able to help them through that process, that could oftentimes then lead to heightened anxiety and depression. There's also living in a world when there's many people who are part of the hearing population, that could often exacerbate those challenges as well. So there's a number of different layers to this, with the communication barrier being probably the most prominent.
And so isolating, I would imagine,
Absolutely.
Too, especially
Absolutely.
Coming out of these past few years and not necessarily having the right avenues to go down.
Yes, and you know, folks had spoken about that. You know, the exacerbation of these mental health issues under the pandemic only made things worse. You know, this bill would really what advocates have said, it'd be a step in that direction to recruit and retain more mental health professionals who are not only fluent in American Sign Language, but also many other different sign systems. And then it would also be requiring the state to have a deaf services coordinator. This would be a state official who essentially would oversee the implementation and hiring and retaining of these mental health professionals to ensure that more people receive more services.
So where does the bill stand? It's going before a Senate committee this week. What's the plan there?
It is. So it's up in front of the Senate Health, Human Services, and Senior Citizens Committee tomorrow. You know, there's been a widespread support leading up to the hearing tomorrow. After that, it would, of course, make its way through the Senate and then the Assembly. But of course, there's that question of funding and where that will go from here. We know that we have an upcoming budget and what that may mean.
And is it limited to mental health care? Because we know just statewide there's a lack of specialized care, especially when you're talking about these populations.
Right. It would be, in certain cases, primary health care, but particularly focusing on mental health care for this bill in particular.
And is there any type of estimate at this point about how much state funding would be needed? Because we're not just talking about hiring these folks, but they have to be trained in what you and I were talking about, different dialects of American Sign Language.
Right now, the state lawmakers that I spoke to for this bill were not specific on the amount of funding that would need to go towards it, but it would have to be substantial, to your point, to hire and retain folks. And one source that I spoke with who does hire folks who provide mental health services for people who are deaf and hard of hearing in Patterson spoke about just how difficult it is to find people to fill these slots, oftentimes taking up to a year to find somebody. So there's the time issue, and then there's also the money issue as well.
That's significant for sure. Bobby Breyer for us will be following this hearing. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brianna.
That's going to do it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. And RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.